From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan, good to see him here. He's behind the glass doing all the hard work. It's a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You have all seen the news by now. We'll get to Deshaun Watson in a moment. The New York Mets have signed Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander's tenure as a Houston Astro is done. Verlander headed to the Big Apple to play for the Mets on a 2-year, $86 million deal. It does include a vesting third-year option, so probably something similar to what the Astros put in their deal with Verlander this past year, where if he hits a certain inning threshold, becomes guaranteed in the final year of his deal. So how are we feeling, Houston, that Justin Verlander is done? His Astro tenure is over. All of the questions about, will Verlander go into the Hall of Fame as an Astro, you can kiss that goodbye because he no longer is a member of this organization, will not finish his career in Houston. How are we feeling knowing that Justin Verlander is officially gone?
I'm good with it. You set me up for it. You get the credit for doing this when it was the unpopular thing to do, but now it is the only thing to do. It's getting over Justin Verlander and realizing what happens next. I think that everybody should be okay with this. I think that everybody should understand, look, with all of the embarrassment of riches that you have in the pitching department and as it relates to starting pitching, and the fact that you are already stacking and racking a dynasty-type lineup for, again, next season, that you can enhance the offense even more, you're going to be just fine. You may have a better team this year than you had the last year when they won the World Series. However, I believe that there are people out there, and I believe that there are more than we even realize, that are going to be butthurt and or officially unhappy now, or their feelings are going to make them sad because the divorce is final. The breakup has happened. It was the inevitable, but now that it's happened, I think people are going to be upset that their Cy Young Award winner is moving on.
I think people are a little bit more understandable with it on two fronts. One, you got the World Series title, and this is something that you mentioned, if you know, from whenever we had this conversation back in very early September about, do you let Verlander move on? And you talked about how winning a World Series title might make it easier to move on from Justin Verlander, because now you have your second World Series, you've justified your organization in a lot of ways. Maybe you don't have to be as aggressive having that anchor at the top end of the bullpen. Also, how Justin Verlander pitched in the playoffs, I think, might have made this easier to swallow for Houston Astros fans, that when Justin Verlander was going out there each and every one of his starts, it was a little bit more unsure than the Cy Young Justin Verlander you got during the regular season. And some people that like to counter that opinion will say, well, the Astros turned to Justin Verlander every single turn through the rotation. And I would say, no, they didn't. Justin Verlander didn't start Game 4 of the World Series on full rest. They elected to go instead with Christian Javier, and that turned out pretty good for the Houston Astros. So that's something that comes into mind, because Nola went on full rest, as Justin Verlander could have and didn't. So I think those two things make it easier to swallow from a Houston Astro perspective. I'm totally okay with this. Now, look, I appreciate what Justin Verlander did for the Houston Astros, trading for him in 2017, being the workhorse and the anchor to a team that won a World Series for the first time in Astros history, right? And doing it in a year where Hurricane Harvey happened and so much of the city was kind of uplifted by that Houston Astro team. So I respect the heck out of Justin Verlander. The memories that Justin Verlander brought to this city, it's all great. I have nothing but great things to say about JV and his tenure with the Houston Astros, but I'm not paying $86 million minimum for 2 years for a pitcher who's going to be 40 next year, had questions in the postseason, and on top of that, you have a surplus of starting pitchers. Tip my cap, thank Justin Verlander for everything he's done as a Houston Astro, but it was time.
You and I talked about it at the time, and I kept throwing out the number that he's gonna want at least 43. That's just the way Verlander's thinking has went. And until we saw an actual offer for it, and rightfully so, you and I had the discussion, and you said, you know, do you really think, where are you hearing that from? Do you think it's going to happen? And I related it back to the Clint Capela deal, right? You're only as valuable as the market says you are. So you're right. We had to see it and believe it with, like, hard numbers for it to actually come to fruition. But you knew that all along, that's what he wanted. That was his benchmark, just like 300 wins is his benchmark for what he's trying to do before he hangs them up, and 4,000 strikeouts. And so you can pretty much read Justin Verlander as much as he tries to keep it close to the vest and know what he was all about, and you knew it wasn't the right thing for the Houston Astros to do. And I think that it did mean so much, and I think even for Jim Crane, because we know that they're golf buddies and they're good friends, and he was the only one that was going to do the negotiation. But I think it was easier for him to swallow and move on from, knowing that he got another title out of it. He got what he needed out of Justin Verlander. He knew that Justin Verlander needed this $43 million a year deal that he probably wasn't going to want to do or have to do.
Are you surprised they didn't match it? Because the details of the contract, 2 years, $86 million. The 2 years, $86 million, like, again, you thought that that was probably going to be the AAV, Scherzer-type money, which is something that everybody was reporting. 2 years isn't the 3 years, but I think we're, like, the Astros drew the line in the sand here, to be completely honest with you. I think they might have done $86 million for 2 years. That vesting option, though, where we don't know the details of the vesting option, right, but if it's anything like the last vesting option for Justin Verlander, remember he signed the two-year deal with the Astros, the second year becomes guaranteed if he pitches 130 innings. I would imagine it's something like that, where if he pitches 130 innings that second year of the contract, the third year becomes guaranteed at 43. I'm not surprised that the Astros didn't match the deal. If it was only 2 years, $86 million, I could have seen the Astros do that. But the vesting third year of this deal, the option of this deal, is where I think Jim Crane, Bill Ferkus, Jeff Bagwell, all of the assistant general managers said, no, thank you, Justin Verlander. We wish you well in your future endeavors.
No, I agree with that. And I think going back to something that you brought up, I think the other thing is, it's the uncertainty of what we know what Justin Verlander was last year. We know what Justin Verlander was for the entirety of this first year, this two-year deal that he walked from because he was able to. But what we didn't know was what Justin Verlander was he going to be going forward. And it's a tale of two different situations. It's the regular season versus the playoffs. And if it's the Justin Verlander we saw in the playoffs, I could do without that Justin Verlander simply at that price. If that was another year at 25, I could stomach that. I could take that. I could see how that works, and we could make it work with even a six-man rotation, seven, doing whatever you got to do. But the fact that that Justin Verlander put a big, massive question mark in terms of what to expect for him going forward, and the price tag went up by $20 million a year, I'm out.
That's one of my favorite things to talk about whenever we break down like front office moves, moves that general managers are making, that a lot of times us and fans, we're like reactive to what a pitcher has done or a player has done. So when we see a two-year deal and like you feel like you're paying for what the player has done, when a general manager's job is to predict what the player is going to do. You're supposed to pay the player predictive on what they do in the life of that contract. But if we only, like, let's just assume for a second that it's only a two-year deal, which if it is a two-year deal, that means something probably went wrong in the second year where that vesting option third year is not kicking in, which means that he probably didn't pitch very good in that second season. But if you just look at it from a two-year deal perspective, $86 million, 43 AAV, the last 2 years for Justin Verlander, and look, I'm sorry to say this, but I don't expect Justin Verlander at the age of 40 and 41 to be as good as he was at the age of 39 last year for the Houston Astros. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to replicate a Cy Young season in a sub-2 ERA when he's 40 and when he's 41 years old. But even if you are paying Justin Verlander for the last 2 years of his production, last year you could say that he was worth $43 million a year. Can you say the same thing about 2021 when he didn't pitch a single inning? No, you can't. So even the last 2 years, if you took the last 2 years and you say this is what the Mets are going to get for Justin Verlander, it's not worth it. It's not worth the money.
Back to this thing too, please, for a second, if you would, Jeremy. Are the Mets capable of going to a six-man rotation? Are the Mets capable of giving him the kind of luxuries that the Astros gave him? Because I don't think so. And I think part of what we saw was as much as they catered to making sure that he wasn't worn out by the end of the year, I think he was worn out at the end of the year.
I did too.
And so I think that when you take away the ability, unless you have a massive lead, of doing what the Astros did and going to a six-man rotation for the majority of the year, I think you're leaving yourself open to actually contributing to the lack of production that you're expecting for a guy you're paying $43 million a year for.
Yeah, and to that point, to kind of, you know, expand on it a little bit from like a Justin Verlander perspective, might be what he was aiming for. He might be aiming for the five-man rotation so he can start 32 games as opposed to a six-man rotation where he's going to start 24, 25 games. Now, starting 24, 25 games versus 32, does it make him better for the postseason? Yes, absolutely. You're 100% right about that. But Justin Verlander now has two World Series titles. He has the Cy Youngs. He has an MVP. He's chasing the numbers. He's chasing the counting stats. He's chasing the wins. He's chasing the strikeouts. I'm not really sure he wanted to be in a six-man rotation. And I think, look, I don't want to put words in Justin Verlander's mouth, anything like that, but I think Justin Verlander would be willing to trade off the postseason success because he's already had championships and rings and things that he could already hang his hat on, that he really wants the counting stats. He really wants 300. He really wants 4,000.
Yeah, I think that, again, right from the get-go, this might not be a marriage set for the long term where they're on the same page. Because I think the Mets are thinking, we want a guy that when the postseason starts is going to be a horse. And he is going to lead us to the promised land like he did when he was an Astro. And I think what Justin is thinking is exactly what you said. I've been there, done that, and I got my jewelry. Now I need to etch my place in the histories and the annals of Major League Baseball by getting the things that mean the most to me, which is 300 wins and 4,000 strikeouts. And so you're right. He probably sees this as, I'm going to empty the tank more so in the regular season because I needed a team offensively capable of getting me wins, and then I needed to pitch and get enough starts to get the wins so that I can get in the next 4 years the 52 wins that I need and the amount of strikeouts that I still have to etch in the record books so that I can go down as one of the greatest of all time. If he got what he wants, and that's what he wants, that's fine. I think the Mets, if they're expecting what they want, which is a guy that's going to be their horse in the playoffs, at a certain point, there might be a conflict.
The path a little more difficult for the Mets to get to the playoffs, though. Oh, like they might have to go five-man where the Astros had the luxury of the six-man. How you feeling, Houston? JV officially gone. He's a New York Met. Therapy couch. How you feeling about one of the best pitchers in the golden era leaving the Astros? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, our HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, when we return, Verlander is a Met. What does it mean for the Stros? What's next for your local nine? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Justin Verlander, a Met on an $86 million two-year deal, a vesting option for the third. How you feeling with the news, Houston? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Not Santa says better a Met than a Dodger or a Yankee. I agree with that. I like the landing spot because I want Verlander to pitch well. Now, I do want to see some, you know, erosion for a 40-year-old because I predicted it, but I like that he signed with the Mets and not an AL team and not the Dodgers. This is a pretty ideal landing spot from an Astro point of view, I think.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, and I think we talked about this last week, I don't care as long as he is in the National League, because even if he does find that fountain of youth for another season and he does have it going on, the chances of you seeing him in the World Series are just in the World Series. So it's not that big of a deal. Let him fight it out and be in a basically up-for-grabs National League where the Dodgers do what they're going to do all the time and win 100-and-some games and set the world on fire, only to crap the bed with their pants around their ankles come playoff time. And then you get teams like the Phillies to compete with teams like the Braves. And you've got so many, and now the Mets. You've got so many teams that are going to fight it out. It's like the old adage of the Western Conference in the NBA. You just want the rest of them to beat the hell out of each other so that by the time they get to the championship, they're gassed and you got the best chance to beat them.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Let's head out to the HRP listener line. Jeff, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. The first thing I'd say is, Justin, thanks for the two World Series rings. Appreciate it. Nobody is ever going to look as good as the Bimbo Bounce in a retro Astros sweater. And in the immortal words of Bart Scott, can't wait to light you up and go 2-0 against you when you're pitching for the Mets in the World Series.
Appreciate the
call,
Jeff.
If they get there.
Yeah, the Astros do play the Mets, though, this regular season. Jeff said the World Series, so I understand that. But they do meet in the regular season, too. I saw McTaggart tweeting about it. He's guessing that it's going to be the Justin Verlander ring day whenever he comes back into town. June 19th through 21st, Mets at Astros for a three-game series. Really?
Yeah.
Your June birthday, too?
Juneteenth.
Oh, okay. So that'll be fun. If
we discussed this a year ago, but yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time, man. Yeah. I can't even remember what happened yesterday. But yeah, Verlander and the Mets coming to Houston June 19th through 21st. If you're looking to give Blankers a gift, maybe you can pick them up some ducats.
No, just give me a Verlander ring because you're right. They're going to be giving them away.
Yeah.
I mean,
and they'll give Verlander his.
Yeah. And I think that Jim Crane will personally give Verlander his. And he will, minus some of the other comments that we had along with that call. There's no doubt there that Jim Crane is still going to be buddies with Justin Verlander. And without Justin Verlander, one could say it wouldn't have ended the same way that it's gone in his stint with the Astros in the two World Series titles and the four appearances and all the other things. But at the same time, they were good for each other. Justin was exactly what the Astros needed, and the Astros needed a guy at the top of their rotation that could be that horse. And so it worked out, and it was a match made in heaven. And it was a short-term relationship, not as long as some people in this city may have wanted it to be, but long enough for this golden era of Houston Astros baseball to keep chugging down the track.
Yeah, yeah. Give him all his due. Give him all his credit. I'm a little surprised that no one has like any negative reaction to this, because a lot of people that I talked to in the offseason, and maybe this tells the story, they felt that Crane ultimately was going to match Justin Verlander no matter what because of how tight that they were. And it seems like even those people that had that take and that opinion even see the silver lining here, that it wasn't worth the money. John from Atascocita on Verlander: shouldn't we give the Astros the benefit of the doubt on not matching on JV because of how the Correa-Pena thing played out? I kind of feel like we shouldn't trust them, that they are building for this future instead of paying chasing stats from the past. I feel like that's been our opinion.
I think we're right on board with it. Like, thanks for the memories and good luck to you, unless we see you in the World Series, but we're great.
See, John from Tennessee, the answer to that question is yes. Now, I'm surprised we're not seeing more of the opposite opinion than ours, though. Like, I didn't think we would be so unanimous across the board. I thought that there would be some negative thoughts about Verlander and the Astros not re-signing him.
I obviously come from a kind of unique situation, right? Like, I literally grew up watching Justin Verlander pitch for the Tigers, and it was really, really cool to be in a situation where the guy I grew up rooting for, who I view as like a guy I was a childhood fan of, win World Series here. I rooted for him when I was still in Detroit in 2017. So it was very, very easy and very cool to get to watch him as an Astro. So there's, for me, a level of disappointment. But A, I expected it. B, I think it is the right call. And so C, I'm disappointed because it's a player I loved watching my whole life. But it makes all the sense in the world. How could you not let him walk here?
Maybe the reason that I'm surprised that there is zero negativity or zero criticism to this was all the hate that I got for saying this on September 1st. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever I brought this up, I was getting ridiculed, criticized. People were yelling at me on the text line. People were telling me that ESPN 97.5 should fire me. How could I be so illogical with a take? Yet here we are, fast forward 4 months or whatever it is, and everybody's like, oh yeah, that was the routine decision.
The funny thing is, I was going to say, like, information changes, but the reality is, not a lot of information has changed.
He wrapped up a Cy Young season and pitched okay instead of great in the playoffs.
But the thing is, that's the information that we had till this point. Yeah. It's not like this playoffs was different than normal.
Here's the thing, and I understand that a lot of people, their heartstrings play some pretty sweet tunes from time to time, and they really get attached to their... it's like if Yuli left, right? They really attach themselves to the people that have meant something and played significant roles in the past. But going forward, it was never the right move at that price to bring Justin Verlander back. If he'd have just opted into 25 for another year, fine, that's great. They can make that work. But when you look at this team, and I heard John and Lance play some audio this morning from Bregman, who said that he went to Crane and basically said, this doesn't have to end, and this could be going on for a long time. Go get this guy because he can help. You don't need this guy. I would rather reconstruct the way you use the money that you would have spent to keep that guy at 43 and add 2 to 3 more pieces to an already stacked puzzle and go, hey, he goes to the National League. They rip each other's heads off. You just got to deal with the Mariners and the Yankees and maybe another team. But you will be the heavy favorite to get there again. And all you need is a fighting chance and be in the fight to get to the World Series. That should be the case for the next couple years.
Yeah. See, this is kind of like what's next for the Houston Astros. You have $43 million that Verlander signed for. You had the $25 million that he was paid last year. You kind of had it, earmarked for you're going to spin this in 2023 so the Astros can get better. I already feel that Jim Crane and the Astros have been operating all offseason with the idea that Justin Verlander was going to leave.
Agreed.
Chasing Jose Abreu for the amount that they chased him was a pretty good indicator that they were going to use Verlander's money, projected money, on offense. Jose Abreu is the first domino that has fallen. Well, what's next for the Houston Astros? We've been hearing tons of rumors, tons of reports that they've been in on Wilson Contreras. We're hearing reports and rumors that they've talked to basically every free agent outfielder, and the latest and greatest is Andrew Benintendi. When the Astros went into this offseason, I wanted to spend the Justin Verlander money because you have six other really good starting pitchers, even without Justin Verlander, that are under club control for a while. I wanted to spend that money on at least first base, left field DH, the combination there, he's going to play whatever Jordan Alvarez isn't playing that day, and then potentially catcher. That's how I wanted to spend the money that the Astros had under the competitive balance tax. They've already been operating in that realm, in that world, thinking that Justin Verlander was going to sign somewhere else. And I fully believe that the Astros will finish up this offseason with at least one more bat, maybe two.
I think maybe two is, I'm leaning more towards two. And I think that they might also look to one left-handed relief pitcher that we weren't seeing on the radar. And I think that because the money is freed up now, and now the inevitable has happened, I'm with you. Jim Crane was not lying when he said maybe the speed in which he was going to do this was a little off. But after they won the championship, when Crane said, my first call is going to be to Justin Verlander tomorrow, and we're going to see where he's going to be. Whenever that conversation happened within the 48 hours or whatever between the final out and the parade, he got a clear understanding of what JV was looking for. And right then, he already realized there's no way we're paying that. Now, then his hope was probably much like I always go back to the way Daryl Morey played the Clint Capella. I know that's what you want, but what can you get? And then his hope was probably, hey, he'll go out and try the market. Too many teams saw the playoffs, realized his age, the Tommy John, and the fact that he didn't look great in the playoffs. We can probably offer him this, and he'll take it. And the fact is we talked about when competition happens, the price goes up. If he inevitably, because the Mets probably also panicked when DeGrom signed with the Rangers, and he got what he wanted, tip your cap. That's all you can do. But you knew right then and there, once he was able to come back to you with that offer, and I firmly believe he had the last chance to match it. And I believe that Jim Crane just basically etched it where he knew it was always going to be. He's going to play somewhere else.
We said about it Friday that we already felt that Verlander had a contract in hand. I think he gave Crane the weekend. I really do. I think Crane had the weekend to decide if he wanted to match it, and ultimately the Astros do not. We'll get back to Verlander a little bit more in the 1 o'clock hour, but straight trash, homie, and there was plenty at NRG Stadium. It's next with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, we had a great weekend this weekend in playing the smart money. When we put money down on games with BZ Money, if you want to get in on BZ Money and then you want to capitalize, not that I recommend that on a weekly basis, but every now and then we know what we're talking about. But if you know what you're talking about when it comes to watching games, betting, and you think you should do it for real, you need to go to mybookie.ag. Mybookie.ag is the only place you should go if you're thinking about putting money down on a sporting event and cashing in the process, because sports betting is intense enough, but you don't need to sweat your payouts with mybookie.ag. MyBookie right now has a no-strings bonus that lets you cash in and cash out quickly. Get started. Go to MyBookie.ag. Use that promo code whenever they ask for one. It's bet975. You can bet as little as $50 up to $2,000. You're going to get a 10% cash bonus. Bet your deposit amount once, you're ready to cash out. You won't find an easy bonus like this anywhere else. It's no strings attached. It's all with MyBookie.ag. Hammer this bonus on MyBookie.ag so you can focus on what's important. That means making money, cashing in on winners in sports. Amp up the fun this week and every week. NFL, NBA, college basketball, college football with the bowl games coming up, and, of course, the playoffs. Soccer in the World Cup, player props, and everything else that you're looking at when you're looking to make a bet. MyBookie's got it for you. Take advantage of that cash-in, cash-out bonus. Use the promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. Like I always tell you, with the only place I tell you to go, MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I want trash bags!
Clean it up.
It's straight trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. Brought to you by Bavia Dumpster Rentals.
All right, straight trash, homie, presented by Bavia Dumpster Rentals. Oh, boy, there's a lot. I don't even know where to start, Blankers.
Oh, I do.
Man, what a lousy performance.
You got that right. I mean, this is, Jeremy, this is the foxhole that you can get into, the rabbit hole that you can't get out of, where you immediately start getting the conversations from people that start going, who would win, Alabama or the Texans? Because that's how bad they are that you have to scratch your temple to think, is this an NFL team? Are they good enough to play an NFL, other NFL teams, or they should be like soccer, where if you're this bad, you should get demoted.
Mm-hmm.
yesterday was no shortage of lots of straight trash. I'll start with the fact that, again, you know, I like to avoid the obvious one. How the hell is Pep Hamilton putting in a play and personnel on first and goal, and your best running back, your best offensive player, is not on the field? If Dameon Pierce is not in the backfield on first and goal inside the five, whatever it was, you already should be unemployed.
I like how you said he was the best offensive player on the team. I appreciate you saying that. It's inexcusable. I mean, it's inexcusable, but it's what the Texans have been this year, the entire season. Pep's been lousy. The offense has been lousy. Everything's been lousy. Like, should you see him in on first down? Yeah. Yeah, he should be in that situation, goal-to-go situation. He should be in the football game. Pep Hamilton's not a good play caller. He's just not.
Fourth and goal when they go for it, and that's the play you go to on another possession?
He threw to a converted linebacker.
The guy was
a linebacker last year. Let's go to that guy in a gotta-have-it situation. Because you had those plays in a playbook, the gotta-have-it situations. That is a gotta-have-it situation.
Yes.
Fourth and goal from the one-yard line, and you're throwing to a dude who is a converted linebacker. Even if he was only just a fullback, you can already question the decision. You're going to a fullback on fourth and goal from the one? That is already a questionable decision. But when the dude's a converted linebacker
ridiculous
that's playing fullback.
Decision.
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand that Pep Hamilton, like, he's playing chess with a bunch of pawns. Not even Bobby Fischer would excel in that situation.
I'm not sure he's playing chess, Jeremy. He might be playing, like, Battleship or, like, Light Bright. I don't think he's playing chess.
No, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch him call plays. It's hard to watch the personnel. It's hard to watch pretty much everything. My straight trash homie that I'm going to lead off with, anyone asking for Deshaun Watson's autograph. Like, people were getting Deshaun Watson's autograph before the game. Like, if you've been living under a rock for the last 700 days, even if you didn't have the 24 sexual misconduct allegations, which he spent money to make sure that those went away, kinda. Like, even if you didn't have that, this is a dude that turned his back on the city, that was demanding a trade after you thought he was going to win an MVP for the Texans, a Super Bowl for the city, and signed a contract extension to stay here, and in less than a year from signing that contract extension, demanded a trade. And then, oh yeah, on top of that, you have the dude being, at best case scenario, a dirty pervert that has 24 sexual misconduct cases, and you have the humanity to ask for that guy's autograph.
Not only that, but there were quotes throughout from, and I understand it. I don't support it, but I understand it if you're a Cleveland Browns fan, and some of the Cleveland Browns fans that were basically saying, and I saw this on the news too in sound bites, hey, Deshaun's with us now. You know, he deserves a clean start. And he's with us, so go Browns. No, he does.
I mean, what are you going to say in that spot, though?
But how are you allowed to say what he deserves? But here's the thing that even got me more. This quote from this Houston Texans season ticket holder who wore a red Texans number 4 jersey signed by Watson said she believed Watson was 100% innocent of the allegations and said, I quote, somebody as successful as he is would never go and jeopardize his career like that. End quote.
Has she ever heard of O.J. Simpson?
Are you freaking kidding me? Have you ever watched sports?
Bill Cosby? Michael Jackson?
You could just keep going. These guys don't care how much money they make. That's their, in their mind, that's their invincibility factor to do more.
A lot of times it gives them the God complex that makes them do more. Yeah, that's an outrageous take. She made the list. She's on Bad Take Boulevard.
I was going to say, she's got a mansion on Bad Take, dude, and she made straight trash homie.
There was a lot of people defending Deshaun Watson yesterday, which surprised me with some people that were defending Deshaun Watson yesterday. On top of people asking for Deshaun's autograph, we talked about this last week. We talked about how's it going to make you feel whenever there's Houston Texans after the game that give some love for Deshaun, that dap up Deshaun. We knew it was going to happen.
Yep, we did.
I said it was going to make me sick. I said I'm going to be doing some serious judging. I said I'm going to think less of these people. Well, the jersey exchange after the game. Deshaun Watson signed these, by the way. They took a picture with the jerseys together. Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. Your bookend tackles are dapping up Deshaun Watson afterwards. Shouldn't surprise us about Titus, because Titus was gushing about Deshaun Watson last week when we played some of the audio. Man, I really feel less about Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard after doing the jersey exchange and dapping up Deshaun Watson.
Well, that just
and I
means hated that when too, he took like care of both. His offensive linemen, they got certificates from Massage Envy.
He paid them off.
Yeah, he took care of his guys when they were there, so why not? That's ridiculous. I mean, look, all of it's ridiculous. The fact that you saw so many people that basically literally gave him a get-out-of-jail-free card and then kept just showing all this love and support for this guy, did you see the awkward bro hug he gave Cal McNair, too?
Yeah, I did. I tweeted something out about that because Tana McNair gave him a cold shoulder and, like basically gave him...
Good for her.
Gave her back, and I tweeted out, like, Bro Bible, like, used my tweet, and somebody else used my tweet.
Is that right?
Yeah, my wife was sending me, like, these stories about how they used my tweet. But it was funny. Like, he went and gave the bro hug to Cal, which I was surprised that he did.
Was, too.
Very surprised he went up to Cal. Cal, I felt, was kind of like...
The
like,
network
didn't know
cut
what to do
right after the bro.
Oh, did they? Yeah. I saw the tweet. I think from I can't remember who tweeted it. Garofalo, Rappaport. One, I can't remember. But I'm surprised that Cal shook his hand. Now Cal, I think, was kind of like, "Well, this is awkward." Didn't
Rock
realize
a hard place. Got to do it,
and it was also fast. Yeah. It was also like real quick. Like, oh, I didn't realize this was going to happen. But Hannah didn't miss a beat and gave him the cold shoulder and turned her back to him. I thought it was awesome. Good for Hannah.
Next one for me, Kyle Allen. Just put him right there.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs, and maybe he should go back there, and maybe he should do something to be like a coach for Dana, because if you thought it was bad with Davis Mills, it's worse with Kyle Allen. The fact that they don't have a quarterback that can play the position anywhere remotely close to what an NFL quarterback is supposed to play, and I get it, Davis Mills may end up being a backup someday somewhere, fine, but for this organization, the fact that that's what you have to choose from at quarterback is just absolutely disgraceful. It's what you needed to embrace the suck for another year, but hopefully that's where it all ends, and that's where you won't have to deal with it ever again, or at least for the long term. Because the fact that you were set up for disaster on the first series and then continued to see the turnovers and the embarrassment and the lack of any chance to move the football, the move we said it shouldn't have been made in the first place, but the fact that you made the move to supposedly get better and you didn't should tell you all you need to know about both quarterbacks, and that was a bad decision.
Yeah, it was a move to make a move. It was a change to change.
It was a move dictated by pressure.
I hate when coaches do that. I hate when general managers do that. Whenever they start listening to the fans, if you listen to the fans enough, soon you'll be with them. Soon you'll be sitting with them, and it might be soon for Lovie Smith. Look, Kyle Allen, I know what Kyle Allen is. Go Cougs. Love Kyle Allen. He's a backup quarterback in the NFL. Look, quite frankly, Davis Mills is a backup quarterback in the NFL. I think having the conversation, who should be the starting quarterback, Davis Mills or Kyle Allen? Is there an answer to the question? Sure, it's Davis Mills. But if that's your lot in life in the NFL, you're screwed anyways.
Yep.
Like, it's not the difference between winning. Like, Davis Mills over Kyle Allen isn't the difference between winning an NFL game. Kyle Allen over Davis Mills, if you're on the Allen side of that conversation, isn't the reason that you're going to win an NFL game. I've seen some people take joy, like maybe the Davis Mills stands that, oh, well, Pep Hamilton's lousy, which both things can be true, right? Where I've seen some Davis Mills stands, because Kyle Allen's been worse than Davis Mills, that are now saying, look, you guys now have to believe me. You now have to see the light that Davis Mills struggles aren't because Davis Mills is bad. It's because Pep Hamilton is bad. And Pep Hamilton's system is making life hard on Davis Mills, which I don't necessarily disagree with. But both things are very true here. Good players play through bad schemes, bad systems. Does it make them lesser of a player? Does it make them play worse as a player? Yes, but they still play to a certain level. Davis Mills ain't that guy. Kyle Allen ain't that guy. If you're having Davis Mills versus Kyle Allen conversations, you're wasting your breath.
Completely agree. Look, I mean, there's so many different things. This segment could last an hour, and we wouldn't cover all of the bases. But just overall, I mean, even the special teams for me, because I'll go to some of the things we haven't touched enough on, but the special teams and coughing up the football and you know, just trying to figure out anybody that could possibly return anything or do anything to try and give you an advantage. It's a three-phase game. That phase is also as bad as the other two. So, you know, don't discount that for a second. The special teams wasn't great either. I'll throw that in there on top of it, piling on, because – there's just too many other things to choose from.
Yeah, my maybe we close it out on this one is just the offense in general for both teams. Like, the Texans were lousy offensively, yes. Pep stinks, yes. Kyle Allen stinks, yes. Texans don't have a great personnel, yes. In this game, yesterday between the Browns and the Texans, the offenses combined, both offenses combined for 587 yards. The Texans' offense scored more touchdowns than the Browns' offense did yesterday. Did you know that? You probably did. But some games with great offenses, you're probably not getting 587 in the NFL game, but you are in college. These two teams combined for less than 600 yards yesterday. Abysmal offense setting football back three decades.
And more embarrassment for the Browns, because I kept touting this team for the last 2 years as having a roster capable, maybe the best roster in football 2 years ago, and a roster capable of being a very good playoff team once they figured out their quarterback. Well, they got their quarterback back, and if the best thing you can say is that the Browns didn't win this game, the Texans lost it. Mm-hmm. That means, to your point, both teams were absolutely putrid offensively. Both teams were an embarrassment. There's only one team that has hopes to get better. But I think that from that standpoint alone, if you're a Texans fan, as much as you know what you got and what you have to deal with the rest of the year, you should put all your hopes on the fact that the other team that's supposed to figure it out and get better doesn't.
Hopefully.
And you get a higher draft pick.
713-780-ESPN. Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. What's your straight trash? 713-780-3776. Texans were lousy. They lost football. We all know that. But did you at least enjoy the struggles of one Deshaun Watson? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, that spot that we love the people at Vivia, because Vivia brings you Straight Trash Homie every single week during the Texans season, so you can talk about and vent about and, like us, get off your chest about how bad the Texans played in certain, if not all, areas of football. But the bigger thing you need to realize is Vivia, just like we take out the trash, can take out the trash and do the dirty work for you, too. What I mean by that is you might be doing some renovations, cleaning out the attic. I mean, doing some things in the kitchen. Maybe you're putting some new countertops and cabinets in. But you didn't think about where the old cabinets and countertops are going to go. And maybe neither did your contractor. That's where Vivia comes in. Because Vivia can save the day. And I mean that in a variety of ways. They offer dumpsters, a 10-yard and a 15-yard roll-off dumpsters. The beauty is they're small enough to fit comfortably in your driveway, attractive enough to keep away the HOA, and more importantly than that, they can drop it off and pick it up the very same day. That means the curb appeal is still there while you keep getting the job done, and that's why so many people go to Vivia. You can do it as a homeowner. I mean, the businesses and the contractors I'm talking about, they do it too. How about Texas Custom Patios? You hear them advertising on this station. You know who they use when they're doing a job and they need to get rid of the waste fast? They use Vivia too. Check them out today. GoVivia.com. That's GoVivia.com. And tell them exactly what you're dealing with. Tell them what you'd like to have them do. They'll drop it off. They'll pick it up. They'll make sure they take out the trash for you. It's great people that do hard work for people like you, the listeners of ESPN 97.5. It's GoVivia.com.
Deshaun Watson's such a sociopath. He's sitting here talking about my legacy. Houston's a big part of my life. The trade was difficult. This dude sexually misconducts over 20 women, and then he lies through his teeth on top of that. Dude's a sociopath. I see right through you, Deshaun Watson. Did you at least, because Deshaun was lousy yesterday, the Browns did everything they could to try to win that game by taking the ball out of his hands. They scored touchdowns without the football, without the offense. They ran it 38 times. They threw it 22. Deshaun was 12 of 22, 131 yards, an interception, QBR of 28.6 if you're into that sort of thing, a rating of 53.4 if you're into that sort of thing. To sum it all up, Deshaun Watson was lousy the first time he took over and stepped onto the football field for the first time in 700 days, which you should expect. But did you, Houston, at least take some joy out of the struggles of DW4?
I think they should. I think that the biggest thing that they should hold out hope for is that the rust never comes off. Like, using Coca-Cola on your handlebars is supposed to get the rust off. You hope that he never runs into a bottle of Coca-Cola, that there's no chance that he gets back to the form that he had when he was at his peak with the Texans, and that, much like the Russell Wilson situation with Denver, you hope it plays out that way for Cleveland too. That, unlike age being the factor, in this case, missing basically two full seasons of NFL football and coming back, yeah, he got the money and that sucks, and you wish he didn't get that. But if he gets the money to be the laughingstock of the league and makes the Browns part of that by basically saying, you overstepped, you went too far, and you're paying the price literally because this dude can't play anymore. Maybe that is exactly what Houston is hoping for to make sure that this whole thing can you know, just get off the get out of their memory.
A football take. I think Deshaun Watson's going to be fine. It might not be the rest of the case, like the rest of the season. I took enjoyment from Deshaun Watson's struggles, though, to answer the question. And curious what you think, Hive. 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I didn't want Deshaun Watson to, you know, carve up the Houston Texans. I didn't want to see a 300-yard performance, three touchdowns, where he just completely dominated. And it's like, oh, that's a quarterback that we thought was a top five quarterback in the world.
Fingers and all that.
Yeah, a little slime season. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I didn't want to see Deshaun Watson at his best against the Houston Texans. So I took enjoyment out of seeing Deshaun Watson struggle yesterday, even though the Texans got hammered in that football game when it was all said and done. That said, I've been watching the Texans from a perspective all season long where I don't really care about the result. In fact, I want them to lose football games. And actually, at this point, 12 games through the season, I haven't felt this way all year, but I've started to feel this way over the last couple of months. I'm actually rooting for the Houston Texans to have like this colossal failure where everything goes at the worst possible way, because I think a lot of times desperation, embarrassment leads to change, and I want change for the Houston Texans. Now, Deshaun Watson, I took enjoyment from that. In terms of long term for Deshaun Watson, especially this season and next season, look, I don't want Deshaun Watson to ever be good at football again.
Me.
Personally, selfishly, me watching it from my perspective, I want Deshaun Watson to be a below average starting quarterback for the rest of his career. Capitalize on the Browns picks that you have for the next couple of years if they stink. If Deshaun stinks, they probably stink. That would be great. But then also what he did to those women, allegedly, and what he did with the trade request. I root nothing good for Deshaun Watson. Do I want him to, like, you know, fall into a sinkhole and we never see him again and he dies? No, I don't want that. I don't want somebody to die. But I want Deshaun Watson professionally, when it comes to football, to be a shell of himself and somebody who never gets back to the levels we once saw.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I just think that I don't wish bodily harm on anyone, you know, unless it's a more significant situation and it's more heinous in terms of, you know, death and multiples and things like that. I think that when you look at this case, I'm totally with you. I want him to fall flat on his face, and I want him to suck for the rest of his career. And I want him to just wallow in the fact that you did this to yourself. I want you to look back with regret, first and foremost, for those victims of all that they went through. I want you to look back in regret and say, much like Tiger Woods probably does in a lot of ways, for saying, if I didn't do the things that I did, there would have never been a hydrant and a nine iron, but my career might have been, you know, vastly different, and I probably would be the greatest, unequivocally the greatest golfer of all time.
So, yeah, I don't think it was so much the iron to the window. I think it was more the back.
Well, but the action, but still, the actions that he, that was the beginning of the end in so many ways for Tiger Woods.
It was more the timeline than like the actual event, in my opinion. And I know that's probably a minority opinion.
Yeah, I would tend to disagree with that. But I mean, look, for whatever the reason, the other case, I think he looks back all the time and thinks about the what ifs. I hope Deshaun does that for the rest of his life. I hope it's not just for the rest of his career. What if I didn't do those things? What if I stayed with the Houston Texans? I was still beloved by the city. They kept building around me, and we actually were able to turn it around. And my career would have been different, too. And maybe I'd be looking at the Hall of Fame instead of the Hall of Shame for the rest of my life. And I don't think he's ever going to escape, no matter how he plays, as much as we all hope that he fails miserably. No matter how much he plays, he will never escape what he's done, the reputation that goes with it, and how everybody sees him from this point to the rest of his life going forward.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Did you take joy out of Deshaun Watson stinking yesterday? 713-780-3776. I find it ironic he's playing for a team with the nickname Browns, by the way. Eric the driver said, would have liked to see a lot more sacks and roughing the passer calls, but 12 for 22, no touchdowns and a pick sure is sweet. 713-780-3776. Now, I want those things to happen for Deshaun, not be good, be a below average quarterback for the rest of his career, never reach his potential or what he once was. I don't believe that's going to happen. I still think Deshaun Watson has very good football ahead of him. Even though he was lousy yesterday, I saw some signs where we're like, okay, that's a little bit of the old Deshaun Watson. Expecting him to play well after missing 700 days without being in an NFL game, I think is a bit unrealistic. And my like football take, aside from all the personal axes to grind, the personal bias I have against Deshaun Watson, and I'm willing to admit I do have a personal bias against Deshaun Watson. That game yesterday reminded me exactly of his first start in his rookie year with the Houston Texans, where he was very mediocre, but you're like, okay, there's some life there. There's some juice there. And then after that one lousy start, had a really good rookie season the rest of the way until he tore his ACL. I think it's very likely that we might see Deshaun Watson play a lot of really good football games here in the very near future.
See, and you and I disagree on that just simply because of the fact that I think it's going to take some time, and I also have some apprehension in saying he's ever going to regain the form that he had prior to the last 2 years. I think that from a your body and a football shape perspective, it's one thing to be strong enough and athletically, you know, gifted enough. Like, that shouldn't have gone away in 2 years because of his age. But I think that from your body being able to take the punishment on a day-by-day and a week-by-week basis and understand how it, you know, what it takes to bounce back from that and to get more of an endurance for taking those hits, but then also to understand from the speed of the game to the reading of the defenses. Look, I think from the standpoint, we always talk about this for the college quarterbacks that are coming out and how it relates to the Texans. Hey, it's one thing to have the measurables, it's the intangibles. I think Deshaun has those intangibles. I think he can read defenses. I think he can go through his progressions. I think he's still athletically gifted enough to get out of the pocket and run. I also think that starting with yesterday, there was an apprehension that won't be there the rest of the season. He knew if he went out of the pocket and started to run that there were going to be a lot of people hoping for it. If he took a big hit or guys looking to not necessarily headhunt, but to make a statement by making it a little extra more punishing when they hit him. And I think that he had that in the back of his mind. He was playing extremely tentative and apprehensive. I think now that that's behind him, I think that now he can kind of take the governors off of himself too and let it go and see what happens. I still am questioning how, you know, if he gets it back, and if so, how long it takes, but we shall see.
Do you think he gets it back?
I don't think he ever regains the form that he had from prior to this all going down.
See, I think that you put more value in missing 700 days for the rest of his career, as opposed to, like, yesterday he wasn't going to be good. Like, he hadn't played 700 games. You're not going to be good. But in terms of, like, his future, I'm going to tell you on the other side why I think Deshaun Watson will regain the form of Deshaun Watson. Now, the timeline, certainly question, might not happen this year. It might be next year. But I do think ultimately he gets it back at some point. But Houston, did you enjoy the struggles for Watson at least yesterday, at least in his first game back, at least against you, even though it came in a losing effort? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, hey, look, we know it's holiday season, you know, between all the hustle and bustle and having to go out and do what you normally do on a daily basis. You got to get gifts. You got to decorate. You got to do the things and get out and do the holiday lights like we did this weekend and other things that you just sometimes don't have the energy for. Well, you can get that energy back by seeing the people at Apollo Men's Health. For both men and women, they're in there all the time to get energy back in their life. And it starts with a B12 shot. It can go as far as all the different methods of hormone therapy that they can administer for you. You can administer at the house. Even for men and women, they have cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. You only have to go in every 6 months, once every 6 months, but you get the energy on a daily basis. That means you can get your to-do list done. That means you can get to the gym after getting stuff done at work and taking care of all your family commitments and the honeydews. It's fantastic. Check them out today and all the services they offer. Go to apollomh.com. When you do, you'll find a whole bunch of services. There might be a few that you're interested in. If you are, make an appointment. Make that appointment, then go in with an open mind and basically answer their questions. Tell them what your goals are. Tell them where you're lacking. They'll put you on a program that works. They'll get you the results you need. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis, and we love you listening to our station and then checking them out. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot or body composition analysis on your first official visit, and then let the process go from there. From a workout program and recovering quicker to all the different ways they can get more energy in your life. They're good people doing great things. Go check them out today, the people at Apollo Men's Health.